You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You know, I think the biggest thing that we all saw that is accountability. And I think the toughest part for us all is that, you know, there was still a life lost. And I don't know. You know, everybody thinks, you know, because of the verdict, everything is right in the world, but it's not. It's not. There's still a lot of things going on that are unjust. You know, and I send my prayers and wishes out to Micaiah Bryant and her family. You know, you think you're getting through one thing and then another thing occurs.
Good morning and welcome into First Take. Thank you so much for being with us. Gentlemen, let's get right into this here. You just heard Chris Paul talking about Micaiah Bryant. She was a 16-year-old who was shot and killed by a Columbus, Ohio police officer Tuesday after lunging at two people while she was holding a knife. The officer could be heard on videotape shouting several times to get down before firing four shots. LeBron posted and later deleted a tweet yesterday showing a photo of the officer who shot Bryant with accompanying caption, "You're next, hashtag accountability," along with an hourglass emoji. Some more tweets from LeBron that I want to continue with here. He added, "I'm so damn tired of seeing black people killed by police. I took the tweet down because it's being used to create more hate. This isn't about one officer. It's about the entire system. And they always use our words to create more racism. I am so desperate for more accountability." Meanwhile, the National Fraternal Order of Police condemned LeBron's tweet with this response. "At King James, with his vast resources and influence, should educate himself and frankly has a responsibility to do so on the facts before weighing in. This is disgraceful and extremely reckless. The officer saved a young girl's life. No amount of gaslighting will change that fact." Stephen A., I'll start with you here. What did you think of LeBron's overall response?
I appreciated the response that he put out there in the aftermath of his initial tweet. But we're about fairness. I know that I am. And the National Fraternal Order of Police, in terms of their statement that you just put up, were right. And it is crushing for me to say that, because LeBron is the standard bearer. He has been pretty close to impeccable as an athlete, incredibly responsible, incredible role model in so many different ways. And this should not, you know, dilute all the great, great, great things that he has done and will continue to do off the court. But in this particular instance, he didn't do his homework before he put out that tweet. I saw the video. Now, I don't believe the officer should have fired four shots. I don't believe Micaiah Bryant should be dead. I think that when you take into consideration some of the things that I've listed in the past in terms of Dylann Roof shooting nine folks in a church with a nationwide manhunt out for him, but somehow, some way he gets arrested and a guy goes in a supermarket in Colorado and kills 10 people, but ends up arrested. But unarmed black men end up getting shot and killed. Somebody needs to explain that to me. And that contributes to the heightened level of frustration that the LeBron James of the world, the Chris Pauls of the world, and so many others in the community, in the black community, period, have been lamenting for far too long. Certainly something needs to be done about that, but you have to be careful about lumping everything into the same category, because there are people that obviously have their take on it that's different from what the black community and those who support what has been transpiring as it pertains to some of these shootings of unarmed black folks, you know, in terms of the support that they provided to minority communities, to the African-American communities, their take is different. And so if you're LeBron James, considering your potency, over 49 million followers on Twitter, over 82 million followers on Instagram, clearly not just shutting up and dribble, but taking a stance and addressing issues with the fervor that it so richly deserves, it doesn't negate the responsibility that you have to know what you're talking about, which LeBron James usually does. He's usually reluctant, Max, and hesitant to speak up and speak out until he researches the facts. In this case, clearly, he had not done so, which he openly admitted. She had a knife. She was wielding the knife. The officer doesn't just have a right to protect himself. He has an obligation to protect other folks in the community. And she was wielding a knife and about to stab someone when that officer elected to shoot her. Now, me personally, I still think there's no, you could have found a way to make sure the girl didn't end up dead, for crying out loud. There had to be another way, a taser, maybe shooting her in the leg or something. I mean, for her to end up dead is just egregious to me. But for LeBron James to put out a tweet and basically says, no, not basically, literally, you're next. I firmly believe that what LeBron was talking about is just like Derek Chauvin had his day in court, a jury of his peers, 12 jurors, all right, that convicted him. That's the kind of accountability LeBron was alluding to. But for cynics, critics, and haters of LeBron James, he left himself open for interpretation. Because not only did he say, you're next, and then said accountability, which I love the word accountability, the problem is he posted the officer's picture, too. In other words, some could argue you were trying to make him a target. I don't believe that for one second. I don't believe that's what LeBron James was doing. I believe that in almost all of the situations, LeBron is incredibly smart and thoughtful, and he doesn't just react emotionally. And he's an incredible role model, and I hope he continues to be. But this was not his brightest moment because he left the door open for the level of scrutiny that will undoubtedly come his way because, as he admitted, he did not have all the facts. And, you know, the Fraternal Order of Police, their statement, unfortunately, in this instance, was on the money. They were not wrong with what they said.
First of all, LeBron's tweet, let me be very clear about this, obviously means to anyone with even a below average IQ and any semblance of education at all, like you have to be living on another planet and or not understand basic language to know what your next means. Are we coming out of a situation where there was vigilante mob justice against police? No. We're coming on the heels of a situation where a cop who murdered someone on camera was tried and convicted of all charges. So obviously, clearly, duh, that's what LeBron is referring to. Number one, that's what he's referring to. And politicians who would use this for political gain, or let me rephrase that. Politicians who would instead lead people to believe that what LeBron was doing was attempting to incite violence either suffer from extremely low comprehension or are lying to their constituents to curry political favor, one or the other, stupid or corrupt, right? Like, that's what it is. Now, let me just say, LeBron acknowledged he made a mistake, Stephen A. He didn't gather all the facts ahead of time. He jumped to a conclusion, and he took down the tweet. So reaction to LeBron saying, wait a minute, what do you want this officer to do? Whatever you think, hey, the officer didn't have to use deadly force. That is a teenager. She already dropped the knife. Whatever it is, it's unclear, and I've watched the video, exactly what happened. Some of it's blurred out. But what is clear is that there's a point of view that is easily seen as legitimate, that, wait a minute, an officer responds to a scene, a girl is being attacked by another girl with a knife, he takes out the threat, so to speak, and obviously, unfortunately, that threat was a teenage girl, right? It is not a good issue. It's not a pleasant issue to look at it, however you look at it. But the point is, for LeBron to immediately assume guilt on the part of the officer, people took exception to. Now, how did LeBron respond, Stephen A? Did he double down and say, no, to hell with you? No, he took down the tweet and he said he has to do more research. That's a legitimate response to someone who maybe didn't act perfectly in the first place. That's a legitimate response. I've also seen takes that LeBron was, quote unquote, doxing the officer. People apparently don't understand what that means. Doxing refers to when you release information that was heretofore not publicly known about someone, directing the mob's ire toward them. LeBron did not release private information and now made it public and tried to incite a mob toward violence toward an individual. Not at all. He said accountability. Stephen A., you brought this up. All caps. Hashtag accountability. No, you are on camera, he seemed to be saying. You were caught in the commission of doing something bad, which is now legitimately disputed. And he's acknowledged that it's legitimately disputed. That was his mistake. You caught something bad. And now you're next. In other words, there was just a situation where an officer killed a black person. It was caught on camera. They were tried and convicted. That is clear. So what is happening now, it seems to me, Stephen A., is LeBron reacted before the facts were out, admitted that he did so, and now it is being used as a political football in bad faith. That's what seems to me to be happening.
First of all, Max, you're absolutely right with everything that you said, but you're missing the boat. And it's primarily because of things that you've articulated on many occasions in the past. When you sit up there and you say, there are politicians lying to constituents to curry favor with them, I think that's a very legitimate point in some cases, without question. When you talk about LeBron James' intent, you're right on the money. I said it before you said it. We totally agree. That's not the issue. The issue is the fodder you provided for those on the other side of the aisle. Now, I'm not talking politics here. I'm talking about for those who disagree with LeBron James, for those who are on the attack, for those who were looking for something, an excuse. He gave it to them because he didn't educate himself about the issue before he spoke, which is something he almost never does. So do I believe that this is something that should have a residual impact and a longing effect where people get to use this as an excuse to condemn LeBron James? Hell no. What he has meant to our community, what he does, where his heart lies, speaks for itself. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, even though you and I both know it shouldn't happen, we know it's going to. And in likelihood, because of it, it ain't going to affect LeBron, who's damn near a billionaire. It ain't going to affect the LeBron who lives in Brentwood, even though racial epithets were sprayed on his gate. It's not going to affect LeBron James by and large. But the average person in that community, when you sit up there and you tweet out the face of the officer and you say you're next and you say your accountability, even though we know what he meant, the fact is they're going to say they didn't know. And oh, by the way, it's not just politicians lying to their constituency. It's a constituency that doesn't need the politicians to lie to them because that's what they want to believe anyway. One of the issues that we have, even when we take into account all the things that African-Americans endure in this country, what do I religiously say? The demonization of black people, primarily black men, but black people overall. And this attitude that you have and what you must think about black folks, and you're constantly viewing us as a threat. Well, guess what? This doesn't necessarily help, because you're going to have people out there that look at that and say, you see, that's why the police got to watch themselves, because now they're being targeted and they're law enforcement. I'm one of those people that's like this. Look, man, I condemn the police officers who engage in heinous acts. I don't paint all of law enforcement with a broad brush, because I've dialed 911. My family has dialed 911. My friends and people in my community have dialed 911. When trouble happens, we dial a 911. I'm not going to castigate everybody, but understand that that's the concern that you constantly have to deal with. And for him to put out the tweet, prematurely, unfortunately, none of us are perfect. I'm not condemning him. I just know they will. And I know they're going to use it. And we're not going to be able to argue about their point of how wrong he initially was.
I imagine one of the most offended groups, obviously black people, given the history of this country. But one of the most offended groups, I imagine, by the Chauvin stuff are good police. You know, so I hear what you're saying, Stephen A., and I also agree that given LeBron James's profile and leadership position, his standard of behavior, he's held to a different standard of behavior. And he needs to consider those things. You're right, which is why I started by saying I thought he did make a mistake. But he acknowledged the mistake. He did not double down. Even take Mark Davis a couple days ago, right? He said, I can breathe. He was pointed out what it might. He said, well, I have to do more research, but left the tweet pinned, left it up and pinned, right? Didn't have the humility even to take it down. And I defended Mark Davis, the part where I think he's trying to be an ally.
Gotcha.
LeBron James acknowledged it. We are not asking LeBron to be perfect because we are all human and none of us will be perfect. And insofar as mistakes go, this was a relatively benign one. It was understandable given the righteous indignation that people feel right now, given the circumstances, given the fact that he called for accountability, meaning legal accountability, obviously, given the fact that the context in which it occurred, police interactions with communities of color, that ongoing issue, the fact you can understand where someone gets very emotional as soon as they
heard the people who want to hold it against them going to hold it against
police.
Yes or no?
Right. So
what are they
going
to do?
I'm getting to that. So what I would say is you're right about that point. LeBron is not perfect. He made a mistake. He took steps to correct it. I would end with this. I would be suspicious of those who demonstrate more outrage toward LeBron today than they did toward Derek Chauvin over the last several months.
And I'm saying to you, count them in the millions, because millions were looking for an excuse to do so. And that's the problem.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Steph Curry's 30-point streak ends at 11 games. He shot 7 for 25 from the field, including a season-worst 2 for 14 from beyond the arc, and finished with 18 points Wednesday versus Washington. Steph, talk to me.
It was a special ride for sure, and never really get too hyped up on individual, streaks or accolades like that, but there were some historical names that was able to pass, and doing something at this age was pretty special. It was a great run. It was something that had been done before, and it was going to end at some point. Now you got to start another one.
Another one. Curry became the first player since Lakers star Kobe Bryant to score at least 30 points in 10 straight games, became the oldest player in league history at age 33 to score at least 30 in 11 straight games after dropping 49 Monday over the Sixers, who are no slouch. Stephen A., did the streak prove Steph is the greatest offensive player in the league?
I think so, but before you, and did you say history? You say history.
I said
you
just in
talking
the
about
league.
This season, right?
No, right
you're
now.
About this season in the league. Okay.
No, now.
Okay, I'm talking about now. Yeah, yes. No. Steph Curry.
But
Max Kellerman and Molly Karam, Molly Karam Rose, please excuse me for diverting my attention away from the Golden State Warriors for a second here. First of all, I want to take a moment to give props to Mr. Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal, because I love me some Bradley Beal, and the Washington Wizards, winners of six straight. And if the playoffs would begin today, they're the 10th seed. They're in the play-in game. Okay, so they would have a shot to make the playoffs. Props to them for that, okay? But Max Kellerman, they're not the ones possessing the largest winning streak in the NBA right now. You know who that is, Max?
Here it comes.
Did you hear the news?
We're going to talk about this later.
The New York Knicks. Okay,
pathetic.
I just wanted to point that out there, ladies and gentlemen. They're a top four seed in the Eastern Conference right now. The New York Knicks. Oh, this is just beautiful. This is a special day.
Oh, my God.
Now let me get to Steph Curry. Over the course of the last 11 games, he never shot less than 45% from the field. Only twice did he shoot less than 40% from like 3-point range, so twice or three times in that 11-game stretch. The dude is phenomenal. And again, the ball handling skills are there, the passing skills are there. The movement without the basketball is something he should be applauded. I mean, the dude is 33 years old, in incredible condition, runs all over the court. He's built himself up. He's got a little bigger, Max, in case you haven't noticed. The physique is bigger now. He's not just this little kid that can shoot. No, he's a grown man now and looks the part. But when you think about his ability to spread the floor, like I told you, from the moment he steps past half court, you have to guard him. That just spreads defenses out and opens up the floor for your entire offense. And when I think about him being the greatest offensive player, that's where that stuff comes from. It comes from that. And that's why I have so much love for him as a player, because I see his impact, how he affects the game because of the spacing that he creates. So what last night happens, that's a given. You get tired, you've been on a road trip, it's no big deal, he'll be back. But he deserves to be applauded for the greatness that he's put on display.
He's one of the greatest offensive players in the NBA, but the burden of proof is not on me. Did he prove that he is the best player in the NBA offensively? No, he did not. Number one, Kevin Durant, when he is healthy, is a better offensive player than Steph Curry. They played on the same team. I saw it. KD was the number one offensive option. Forget about defense for a second, right? KD's a better offensive player than Steph Curry. That's one. So there's one guy right there. James Harden, I think, what Steph is doing is, it's close among these guys, and what he's doing is miraculous. You want to argue Steph over Harden? All right. But I'll take Harden based on what I've seen this year. No, he can't shoot like Steph. No one can, ever, right? But Harden can really shoot. He can score from anywhere. He's physically stronger than Steph. And he's actually better running an offense. You know, in Houston, I thought he was worse because the ball doesn't stick with Steph. As you said, he moves without the ball. He can play on and off. And he's really a shooting guard, a two guard, trapped in a point guard's body. James Harden's conducting of an offense, orchestrating of an offense this season was as masterful as any you ever want to see by LeBron James or Magic Johnson or anyone. And he's one of the greatest scorers of all time. I think I would give Harden this year, I'm surprised to be saying it, a slight edge over Steph. And then there's Lillard, who can do everything Steph can do, not quite as well until it matters most. And I value high leverage moments. So Lillard is right there. And I'll tell you another guy we haven't been talking about, Stephen A. Jokic. This man is averaging over 26, 11, and like 9. He's shooting better than 40% from 3. He's a better passer than Steph, and he's a center. I think that Jokic is this year's probably the best offensive player overall, trailing maybe only James Harden when Harden's been healthy. So I think Steph is way up there, but I wouldn't put him number one.
Well, first of all, Max Kellerman, if you're going to bring up numbers, particularly when it comes to Jokic, well, you know what? Let's stop talking about Michael Jordan as the greatest. Let's put Kareem Abdul-Jabbar up there. Let's listen to Isaiah Thomas, who put Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, 19-time All-Star, 6-time league MVP, 6-time champion, the greatest scorer in the history of basketball, the all-time leading scorer, et cetera, et cetera. We still don't put him ahead of Michael Jordan because we exercise something called the eye test, too. And so as a result, we know better. That's number one. Number two, when you talk about Steph Curry and you compare him to Kevin Durant, I know that Kevin Durant's a better offensive player, but what do I say? Kevin Durant is more efficient. What one thing that Kevin Durant lacks is the assertiveness, the aggression, because that's a big, big thing. He wants to play the right way. Excuse me. Oh, my goodness. I almost happened to sneeze. But that's what Kevin Durant likes to do.
I told you we need a vaccination for pollen. Sorry to interrupt. Tell me about it.
It is pollen. Pollen's in your nose.
Oh,
my nose is stuffy, and I got a sinus headache, too, but I'm all right.
Here's the deal. It's so bad.
When you look at it, Kevin Durant, I know that Kevin Durant is a better offensive player. I think he's the best player on the planet when healthy, me personally. But what I'm saying is that Kevin Durant will gladly defer and be a bit deferential and not be as assertive or aggressive. When Steph Curry goes out there, he's not only a marksman, he has a marksman's mentality. And that's what I say right now when you look at his level of efficiency at this particular moment in time. The efficiency combined with
the aggression is
what puts them there.
Fair point, because Jordan wasn't like, you could say, oh, this guy's as efficient or more efficient, but Michael Jordan had more aggression, was a better offensive player. That's a fair point. I'll still take KD's offense. But Jokic and the eyeball test comparing Kareem and Jordan, I don't like that at all. Because first of all, Steph ain't Michael Jordan. And second of all, Kareem is the guy Jordan really had to pass for a lot of people to be considered the greatest. And Jokic is not playing just like a center. Stephen A., he's bringing the ball up. He's initiating the offense. He's bombing from three. He's a load on the inside. He's doing everything.
He ain't better than Steph Curry.
All right, guys, let's leave it there. So we're praising Steph Curry for making shots. How about Joel Embiid almost making a shot? Did you see it? 76ers star narrowly missing what would arguably be the best game-tying buzzer beater in NBA history, inches away from the most impressive game-tying shot. Max, how good was Embiid's shot attempt?
It's the best miss I've ever seen on an NBA level. Like, I could think about Vince Carter with the alley-oop that he got too high up for and everything like that at UNC. But at an NBA level, that's the best miss of all time, guys. First of all, Embiid hitting threes toward the end of that game even put them in a position to maybe steal it. And then look at this. The length of the court, to tie the game against an excellent team, it doesn't just go in and out. It goes in halfway down and out. I have not. Maybe I've seen something like it. I don't remember it if I have. That's the best miss I've ever seen.
That's the difference between Max and I. I don't think about misses. I think about makes. I can give a damn. I don't have the slightest clue what the greatest miss was. Okay, I guess you can put Gordon Hayward in a national championship game for Butler against Duke in there if you want to. I mean, you could do that. Okay. I don't think about misses. I think about makes. Okay, so I don't have the slightest damn clue, you know, what happened with, you know, in terms of the greatest misses. I couldn't begin, and I've been covering the NBA for damn near a quarter century. I couldn't begin to tell you what the greatest miss was. I don't remember because they missed.
Well, you're missing it.
Yes, I am.
Oh, my God.
Big time.
Oh, my God. All right. Are we done on
He's
that?
He's right.
I think we're
He's
done.
He's right. I'm missing it. I'm missing it. I mean, did the analytics department come up with a stat for the greatest misses? I mean, if anybody would know that, it would
Stephen
be Max.
A. Stephen A.
It would be Max.
You're so caught up in analytics. This is the eyeball test, Stephen A.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Unreal. Joining us now on First Take, national champion and soon-to-be NFL draftee, Alabama star running back Najee Harris. Najee, thank you so much for being with us here this morning. And I'm sure Stephen A's feeling a lot of love right now. Obviously, Alabama's his college team. And the Steelers. And the Steelers are his NFL team. And that's where I want to start with you, sir, because Adam Schefter said your Zoom call with the Pittsburgh Steelers was the coolest one you had. So what made that organization so special in that interaction? Talk to me.
Yeah, really it's just the people, the staff that they have. You know, they're all, you know, really really welcoming and stuff like that. So, you know, just to be around a welcoming staff, especially during this draft time where, you know, it's always so uptight. You know, it's always it always feels welcoming and stuff like that, more relaxed.
Well, first of all, man, welcome to the show. Listen, I know who I'm talking to right here. As far as I'm concerned, best running back in football. That's who the hell I'm talking to. And you said you brought up, I was going to ask you this, but since they brought up that you were talking to the Steelers, is there a chance that, you know, you think that you could end up being a Pittsburgh Steeler? Because God knows we need you. I mean, what have they told you?
I mean, like, you know, this is the draft process. So, you know, I mean, I don't make the decisions. The only thing I can control is, you know, me training and working out and stuff like that. I can't control that. You know, it'll be good to be a Steeler. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I just want to know where I'm setting up shop at for the next couple of years and what colors I'll be wearing. If it is the Steelers, then, you know, I'll be more than happy, you know. But like I said, I can't control stuff like that.
Don't let Stephen A. try to send you to a place with no offensive line, Najee.
No.
Look, you're one of the most well-rounded backs coming out of college I can remember. At your height and size, athletic ability, jumping over guys, catching passes, the whole thing. What is it you want to show on the next level in your rookie year, wherever you wind up?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I want to show. I want to start off with, you know, saying that, you know, for a bigger back, you know, at 6'2", 230, there's a lot of things that people say that they can't do, like, you know, not being agile, not being utilized in the pass game. You know what I'm saying? Maybe just like a bruiser back, you know, he's not really good in open space. You know, all these things, the stereotypes that they say about, you know, a bigger back. And, you know, so I want to show that, one, I could do all that. You know, I want to show, too, that, you know, the need of a running back, you know, they say a lot of stuff about, you know, don't pick a running back in the first round, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, I want to show that, you know, that is still, to me, like the most important positions on the field of having a really good back you can utilize in a pass game, and you can utilize with blocking and stuff like that too, protecting the quarterback and short down and distance positions, situations. So, you know, for me to show that, you know, they keep saying, you know, the drop-off of a running back is not that important. You know, a big back can't do all this stuff right here. You know, I want to, you know, prove all that stuff of my rookie year too, and just me being in the league of showing that, you know, the value of a running back is still important, and, you know, a running back who's that big and stuff like that can be utilized just as a scat back, as a little back, and, you know, can be used in all three downs, for sure.
Najee, obviously players make the game. Players make programs. We understand that, and you're big time, and I think you would have been big time no matter where you played. But I must ask you, because you see the plethora of players coming from Alabama as first-round picks and what have you. You know how fond I am of the great Nick Saban. Can you talk to me about and tell us something about the Alabama program? Like, is there something about this program, you know, that just, I mean, you know, that just gets you prepared? I mean, we look at it and we say, obviously, they get you prepared for the NFL. But is there something special about this program being at Alabama that you could crystallize for a lot of people that we may not realize about the program?
Yeah, man. So for me, you know, I'm a real grinder. You know, I really love competition. So me coming out, I was the number one, whatever, you know, recruit or somebody like that, you know. But, you know, for me to go to Alabama where they bring in, you know, the number one DB, the number one linebacker, the number one defensive lineman, you know, the competition level in practice is almost greater than the game. because, you know, you're going up against all these guys who's future first rounders, future Hall of Famers, future all pro, all this talent that's coming there. So, you know, just me being in practice will be almost as hard as the game because I'm going against all these guys. And these guys, you know, I mean, they're coming down hitting on defense, you know, like Minka, you got Razor, you know, you got Mac Wilson, you got Deron Payne, you got all these guys coming there, you know, and really laying the wood. So, you know, for me to get that in practice, and then when I'm in the game, you know, I'm going up against, you know, all these other, you know, talent. It's just in practice, I'm already used to it. That's one thing. Another thing is, like, you know, we're bringing all type of NFL guys in there. You know, we got Sarkisian, who came from the Falcons. We got Brian Daboll, who's with the Buffalo, who's at Buffalo Bills now. You know, we bring all these NFL guys, and they try to make it, you know, the offense as NFL ready as possible. So, you know, me learning all these things there in college that now translate into NFL, I'm going to all these Zoom meetings in NFL, and I just know all of the things like this because, you know, we learned all that in practice. We learned all that in film. You know, we learned all that on game day. It just translates so well into the NFL that, you know, sometimes, you know, I wouldn't even prepare for these. I would just know it already because, like, you know, it's the same terminology as we use. It's just different names. So, you know, for them to get us ready to play at the next level, if that's what you want to do, for them to bring in all the guys that they do and you like competing, then, I mean, Alabama's hands down the number one place you want to go for sure to get you ready for the next level.
I wanted to ask you about the Miami Dolphins because I seen you projected to go there at 18. And I love you on the Dolphins. That would be a problem. But I want to piggyback on something that Stephen A. just asked you and that you answered, which is, you know, you it's not like you didn't play as a freshman, but you were behind a lot of really good backs, including Josh Jacobs. Do you think, looking back, were you ready to, like, could you have started as a freshman? Or do you like the way it works at Alabama because they are so deep, you don't get as many carries until you're really ready to do your thing? How would you answer that?
I mean, like I said, I'm always a competitor. I feel like, you know, I'm always ready to play. It was a new offense. It was a new scheme that, you know, me coming out of high school. But, you know, I was always ready to play. Actually, they threw me in there my freshman year in the national championship game. And that's the biggest game of the year. That's what everybody practiced and played for. And we wasn't winning by a lot. We was losing by almost like 3 touchdowns. You know, they threw me and a couple other freshman guys in there. So, you know, to answer that question, what, do I feel like I was ready to play? 100%. You know, I went in there. I was juiced. I always just say, like, you know, throw me in the fire. You know what I'm saying? Throw me to the wolves and watch me come back leading the pack. You know, so, you know, they threw me in there. I was excited. I got to, you know, make the most of my opportunities and stuff like that. You know, am I happy that I was coming off the bench like that? No, I don't think any true competitor will be, you know, happy when they feel like they can make an impact playing in the game. But, you know, mm-hmm. You know, it's really just waiting your turn and learning as much as possible and soaking up as much as you can from the older guys in front of me. Like you said, it was Josh, it was Damian, and it was Bo, you know. So for me, just soak up as much as possible. And then when it's my time to make the most of my opportunity, you know, I'll be ready.
Yeah, I knew you were a good teammate when I heard that Adam Schefter story that your flight got canceled and then you drove 9 hours, 9 hours. Talk about getting stiff to Alabama's pro day and you weren't even working out just to be there for your teammates. That was pretty impressive. But I got a little surprise for you, Najee, before we let you roll. Okay, sir. So we wanted to show you the custom Marvel cover made for your draft profile. What do you think of your powers? Yep, check it out. Your powers being compared to Marvel superhero Blade.
Did y'all just say, bro, what? Y'all said Blade?
Yeah.
Let me see, that's dope.
That's right.
That's dope.
Yeah,
man.
That's real.
Bro, y'all said Blade. Oh, man, that's dope, man. Who thought of this? Y'all are so creative. That's funny, man. I like that, though. That's dope. I want to get a shirt of it or something like that.
Good.
Maybe I'll flip it and start selling it on my website. I'll be dope.
I'm glad you like it. I'm glad we got to surprise you with something. Najee, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate you. And we'll
Steelers.
Be checking you out of the draft. Good luck.
Steelers, get him.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, guys. Appreciate everything.
Always,
yes, sir.
Always his agenda.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.